It is November 30th, 2011. I am in Fargo, North Dakota, interviewing Chester Albert Gibbert.
Hey, Alfred.
I am interviewing Chester Alfred Gibbert, G-E-B-E-R-T, in Fargo, North Dakota, and the interviewer is Stephanie Manassas. All right, Mr. Gibbert, could you please tell me the date you were born and where you were born?
8-11-1927, August 11, 1927. I was born in Princeton, Minnesota. I'm a Princeton man. How do you like that?
Okay. Tell me about your family. How many siblings did you have, and what did your parents do for a living?
My father and mother were farmers. We lived at Princeton, Minnesota, 50 miles north of Minneapolis. And I have an older sister. She's about 90 plus now. And a brother who's a Marine. And he died 1985, I think it was. And I have another brother, Harold, and he is living in South Moorhead, or South Fargo, in a retirement home. And obviously he's close to 90 also. And so I was born on a farm. I thoroughly enjoyed the farm life, but I did not want to be a dirt farmer. Well, I had idea. My two brothers were military men. Both, one was a Marine, Don was a Marine, and my other brother, Harold, was a Navy man. He just missed Pearl Harbor by 8 hours. He was out to sea, and he came. They saw the airplanes coming from the mainland, from the U.S. of A. They saw them flying over, and long and short of it was, there were the planes that bombed Pearl Harbor. That's why he came in late. He came around the Hawaiian Islands 8 hours later. And my other brother was a Marine, tough Marine. He serviced numerous well-known military planes like Pappy Boyington. You're too young to know about that name. And Major Joe Foss from South Dakota. He serviced their planes. And I dearly loved both of them. And I was just a little bit too young to get into the service. And I went with my best buddy who I grew up with. He's just 2 hours or 2 days. I was just 2 days ahead of him when he was born. And we were in the Navy together. So we had a good life. And we played football, baseball, basketball at Princeton. And as I say, we went aboard the battleship Iowa. We had boot camp in San Diego, and we went out to sea, and we went over to Japan. And of course, the war was over, and we were just occupation troops, so to speak. So he got transferred to another ship, a hospital ship, and he didn't like it. He was scrubbing decks all day long. And I transferred to a different ship, USS Columbus, a cruiser, and I came back to the U.S., and they decided that they didn't need me. I was in the reserves section of the Navy. And so in San Pedro, California, I was given a little job taking messages from a ship, from my USS Columbus over to the bees and then bringing messages back. And, it was scary because my driver was trying to miss a box that was in the street. And at the wrong time, the Admiral was up in the conning tower and he sent down somebody else, a couple of officers down. You're under arrest. See, I was ready to get out of the Navy. I didn't want to have any problem. Need more things like, you're under arrest for skylarking while on duty. Oh, bad news.
Skylarking was because you were not driving straight, or what's skylarking?
Well, that means you're goofing off.
Okay.
My driver, he tried to miss the box. Wrong time, and saw the vehicle moving around, and that high up in the building, you couldn't spot what was going on underneath. But anyhow, but the long and short was, I had the captain's mast. I think there were a couple other gentlemen or seamen. And the long and short of it was, the skipper or whoever was in charge said, the war is over, but you can't do that foolishness. Each one of us had some kind of a problem. Don't do that no more. And I was happy I was going to get out. I think about 3 days later, I was hitchhiking up the west coast, up to Tacoma, Washington, hitchhiking back to Minnesota. So I had a very good time in the Navy, and but it was the best thing that I could ever have done in my whole life, other than some of the travels that I've had. It wasn't that I didn't like where I was growing up, but I was not happy with trying to. I didn't want to be behind a farting horse plowing in the field. Sorry to say that, but a recruiter from Minneapolis came to Princeton, and two of my buddies, me and myself and my Leland Ward, he's now dead, I'm sorry to say, we both enlisted. I suppose all the enlistment values were when we got to Fort Snelling. I don't remember what we raised our hand, we obey the world, or what the officer says. So, I had boot camp at San Diego, California, and I do remember interesting activities as we took a train from Minneapolis all the way across the west part of the U.S. And several of the boys were from Arkansas. Very tough dudes. Oh, yeah. You could tell they had been around the horn a little bit. So when we got to boot camp, you had inoculations. Those are the boys that fainted first. I've never fainted in my life. So I could always laugh at those gentlemen. And so I had, I don't know how many weeks of boot camp. It must have been 7 or 8 weeks. And pretty soon we were notified that we were going to be going aboard a ship, whatever ship. And then we went to San Pedro, P-E-D-R-O, California, and we got aboard the battleship Iowa, the biggest battleship in the world. And
now, what month did you enlist?
Let us say, date of entry into active service, 4 September 1945.
Okay.
And the highest rank I had was Seaman First Class, and I was aboard the USS Iowa, BB-61, And then the USS Columbia, Columbus. They spell it wrong. All right. And at Tokyo Bay, they transferred me to the Columbus. And then I came back to the U.S. On the USS Iowa or Columbus, and then I did this duty for the whoever some captain was up in the conning tower in the U.S. San Pedro Naval Training Station, whatever it's called, and that's when I had the problem. Well, it wasn't a problem. It wasn't my fault. The man, my driver, tried to zigzag. Now, maybe he did a little bit more than just a zigzag, but I'll give him credit for he did not want to damage that vehicle, the government vehicle. So, but then I had a little bit of, I was scared. I was really scared. I'm not going to be getting out. I'll be in the brig in Norfolk, Virginia, wherever it is. And but anyhow, the skipper said that the war is over, but I don't want you to be fooling around like that. No more, no more. Anyhow. So I, as I say, I worked in the radio section aboard the battleship Iowa for the first class radioman. All I could do was make coffee for him. That's my biggest job. And he didn't even like my coffee.
And you did this all day long, is make coffee?
Well, yeah. Whenever he wanted a cup of coffee, I got the pot out, poured a cup of coffee for him. And I was a little peon, seaman, not even a full-fledged seaman. But I finally made seaman first class. I think it was aboard the USS Columbus. I'm not sure. Whatever. It doesn't make that much difference. But you see, I did not have any activity in the war at all. The war was over, and I was happy to go to Japan. I always loved the Far East, and I still do. And so I was happy to be in the Far East and to get to Japan. But I tell you what, when I got there to Tokyo Bay, I obviously have not seen much wartime activity. And Yokohama, Yokosuka had been bombed and fire burned, and we didn't get down to Nagasaki. But I got down to see the last of the submarines that were sunk out of I've been trying to think of it all day long. What port on the very south end of Japan? And I saw and my best buddy, an Indian buddy from Rapid City, South Dakota, was one of the men who set the depth charges
to sink the submarines,
the
Japanese submarines?
Yeah, the Japanese submarines, yeah.
When did you get to Japan?
Hold it here. Oh. It would be... Well,
was it winter time when you got there?
That's too many years ago.
That's okay. So you enlisted in September, and then you had October, November of boot camp. So then November, you went up to San Pedro.
Okay. Let's see. either early winter or roughly around that time.
Okay.
So, and I was in Japan area just about 2 or 3 months. And then we transferred to the USS Columbus and came back. And it took us, I suppose, 2 weeks, give or take.
And what did you do in Japan?
What did we do? Drank beer.
Drank beer? Okay. That was during off hours, probably.
Oh, yeah. Well, here we had this little bit of news. Our best buddy, the good football player, basketball player in my hometown, was the manager of the enlisted men's club. So he bought us all the beer we ever needed.
Ah.
Me and my buddy, Leland Ward. And so we stuck close to Lige Suthers. He was a great man to know. So I had the chance to go climb Mount Fujiyama. I went and drank beer instead.
You had a chance to climb the mountain and you went and drank beer instead.
Yes, I sure did. I'm ashamed of myself to say that, but...
You were young.
Yeah, right. Yes, God. I really, you know, and I'm shipping off of the, getting out of the battleship Iowa. And now I'm going into a new ship, trying to find out my way to find the toilet, with the head, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I never did get a chance to get this trip to Mount Fujiyama. I kicked myself right all the way to the ear to the moon. I didn't have any activity, but I did get to stay overnight in a Japanese family's house.
You did? Tell me about that.
They were very, very friendly. They weren't the military people, so I got to stay at their house. And in those days, I could cross my legs and sip tea, food with them. And they were very polite all the way around. And I guess I never did make any bad moves. I was a guest in their house. I thought, when you're a guest in somebody's house, you do what they do. And it was a very interesting activity. So, as I say, I was one of the few guys that made an effort to talk to some of the Japanese people, and I get invited into their home, stayed overnight. Overnight and a part of the early part of the day also. But very interesting. I ate with them, all their Japanese food, and it never bothered me a bit. I have a cast iron stomach, so to speak. I'm happy about that. My whole life I can eat just about anything. I've even eaten seaweed in the Atlantic Ocean. That was on a dare, but that's okay. So I had a great, I've had a very interesting life after having left the farm. Not that I would, I said earlier, I didn't want to have to look in a sandstorm when I'm plowing with a horse. We did not have tractors. We didn't even have electricity on the farm. We were just a mile out of town, and the municipal power plant came 3/4 of a mile, and we were a mile out of town. We missed out on electricity. And we, in REA, which is the Rural Electrical
Association.
Yeah, the government. So we were too close to town to get REA. It would have been half a mile farther, but that's the way life goes. Where was I?
About Japan, about the family that you visited in Japan.
Well, excuse me. Well, as I say, it was a very interesting trip, and some of the boys, when I came back to the ship, I was telling them about living with the people overnight, and, oh, geez, you know, I wonder if we could do that. You have to ask. It's only I just visited with the people and said, I don't remember what I said, how I asked them, can I stay with you overnight? But I think they said, no, something like, no problem, no problem. Of course, they were the people who lost the war, so they weren't military, just plain old Japanese family. And I think there was a girl in the family, I can't remember how old, but I'd say she's probably 14, 15 years old. And she laughed in my conversation quite frequently. She thought I talked so funny.
Did she understand English?
She understood it. And I also, oh, here, I'll tell you this a little bit. My brother was in the Navy. My brother, who was in, just missed Pearl Harbor, was in the Navy from 1939. And he sent home the Our Navy magazine. And I had 4 months or 5 months of how to speak Japanese. So I could speak some Japanese before I went into the Navy.
So you practiced Japanese?
Yes, I surely did.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you had no idea that you were being sent to Japan.
No idea. But I could say simple words. Simple sentences. And then I took Japanese at the University of Minnesota, and my teacher loved me. She was the only one who had somebody knowledgeable with Japanese language. So I got A's, a lot of good A's.
So you studied, they had Japanese classes at University of Minnesota?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Wow.
Yes, we did. Well, you see, the military veterans came back. Many veterans knew some language in the nations that they were in. But some, well, got my Mrs. Cyril Boyarsky. She married a Russian, Mrs. Cyril Boyarsky. I'll never forget her. Well, I don't remember her maiden name. It doesn't make any difference. But it was nice that she liked me, because I was the only one in the Japanese class. There was about 12 or 15 people, and I could speak better Japanese than the students were. Not better, but I could understand more words. That isn't the right way to say it. But anyhow, she liked me, and I brought her coffee.
Did she like your coffee?
She never said bad things about it, but you know, like my first class radio man aboard Battleship Iowa, she liked my coffee. I didn't. All right, where was it?
So tell me more about the Japanese. How did you feel about the Japanese civilians?
Oh, they were a conquered nation. I respected them as human beings, and I never said anything bad about them. And they thought I talked funny, but that's, I probably understood about the same thing. They talked so very fast that I would laugh at their conversation also. So it was interesting that I could visit with them and sit at, well, I don't think I ever sat at a table, sat cross-legged on the floor. I ate all the food with the same as they had, and we would always take some candy. We to the Gidunk stand, Gidunk, G-I-D-U-N-K, take candy over to them. When I, we, well, not only when I stayed with that one family. We would take candy and give it to the kids.
Okay.
And then they would laugh and just play with you. And we had no problem at all how the Japanese felt, because they were a conquered people. And they knew that if you made a bad move, you might, police might come by and say you did not do the right thing. Who knows? I never tried to find out what would happen. If anybody, nobody that I ever remember aboard ship ever said bad words about the Japanese. They were defeated people, totally defeated. And they knew that they had lost the war. They did not hold up the military idea anymore. And so they just knew that, well, if you did not treat them reasonably well, they might have done something. But I never had any problem like that. I respected them. They were a conquered nation, and you know, sometimes there were American military people did atrocities to the Japanese, as well as the Japanese did atrocities to the Americans, same as Germans. European war. But it was a very interesting time. But as I say, I came back and I hitchhiked all the way up the West Coast and hitchhiked across northern part of the U.S. And I had some very interesting experiences there too, but the war was over. But I hitchhiked just about around the United States. I had an idea that I was going to go around the United States, around the border, northern border, and the Mexican border. But I got married and sat there, changed my whole idea and when I went to school. But I've had interesting experiences all over the U.S. of A. I've had scary ones. At one point, I had a ride in Ohio coming back. I worked on the East Coast with my brother and uncle on the East Coast in concrete work. And I could take off anytime I pleased and come back because I'm relatives, you know. And so I got a ride into Ohio, and an old farmer, I hate to say it this way, I don't think he was really going anyplace, but before you know it, I'm carrying a little ditty bag. You know, he's put his hand on my leg. And I thought, I don't like this idea. So at one point he slowed down. I opened the pickup door, and I threw up the little ditty bag out and rolled out into the grass. And I was bruised up a little bit. And he just rode down the road. I was more scared. One other interesting little bit of experience. When I came out of New Jersey, I was on the west coast of whatever town in New Jersey was, the highway was. And three ladies, school teachers from Brooklyn, only one of them knew how to drive. The other two ladies were in the back seat. And the first thing the driver said, "Do you know how to drive a car?" "Yeah, I drove a pickup all the way from Tryon, Georgia, all the way to Newark, New Jersey. I think I know how to drive a car." "Okay, get in." Just like that. She didn't know if I could drive or not. And we went all the way across Ohio, and I think it was about the west part of Ohio. Well, it doesn't make any difference. Anyhow, we thank you for letting for you driving our car, and I thank you very much myself for letting me drive the car and move as fast as we went under the speed limit. But those ladies were they had a hell of a good time. they were so good chatting, and I don't remember anything consequential. There was any kind of a conversation that they had. But they had a good time. I did too. So there was one bad experience, one very interesting experience. And of course I've hitchhiked with truck drivers, and I met some interesting truck drivers. Well, anyhow. I've had a very interesting life. I'm happy to report that for you. But as I say, I had no wartime experience other than we saw the bombed out area in Japan.
What bombed out area did you see in Japan?
Well, Yokohama.
Okay.
All it was smokestacks.
Yokohama, is that near Nagasaki or Hiroshima?
It's I don't know how many miles away, but Yokohama and Yokosuka are relatively close. They're industrial cities, so all you saw was smokestacks left. Everything else was burned up.
And they were bombed by regular bombings?
Well, what's a regular bomb?
Well, I mean, they weren't close enough to the atomic bomb?
Oh, no. That was well ahead of the atomic bomb.
Yeah, so they were just regular bombs dropped on them. Okay.
Yeah. Fire bombs.
Fire bombs.
Yeah.
And what was that like seeing these cities that were bombed out?
Horrible. You saw the cities that they had somewhat cleaned up, and they were still very scared, more than Tokyo area. Tokyo was not really that much of a bombed out area, but Yokosuka, Yokohama, it was the industrial part of the city. Same thing, big cities here. They would be bombed day after day after day. So,
what did you see there? Tell me what you saw there.
Oh, well, I took the trainer quite frequently, and all you saw was vacant buildings, what's left of a building, and people were very downtrodden. That you knew that they had just been beat to hell, and their bodies. I guess I never did see anybody with any sores or anything, because maybe they've been taken care of medically. I rode a train quite frequently from Yokohama as well as Yokosuka into Tokyo. But yeah, that's many, many years ago. I don't really remember any gruesome scenes other than the bombed out buildings.
Mm-hmm.
You see one bombed out building, you see all you need to see. In Tokyo, I went down, I think it was 13 floors down underground, dance hall.
Wow.
Yeah.
13 floors underground.
Underground, yeah.
And it was built to protect them from bombings?
I would assume so.
And this was a Japanese dance hall.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you go out there at night to go dancing?
Sure.
What was that like?
Oh, well, you just dance with other Navy guys or some nurse or something like that. I don't think I ever danced. Well, I really wasn't a great dancer, so I didn't do much dancing. Sat and drank beer more often. I think the Japanese people were happy to have somebody to dance with besides some other girl or, well. Well, the uniforms of the Japanese were not exactly the most interesting looking. Baggy shorts, or pants, and boots. Well, so same with the Navy and Army in the U.S. at that point, and now they're so spiffed up there.
Mm-hmm.
They're totally different. And now they look like they're human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyhow, it was a very interesting bit to have had that opportunity to go down. The elevator still would work. I don't know how it worked, but we would go down about, I think it was about 13 floors underground for a bomb shelter. And how they could keep the water out of there, because you're right along the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You bust a water pipe and you're going to have water. So I suppose they must have fixed it up to make it sanitary. But in those days, you don't think of asking all the, how did you ever clean up this bomb shelter? You don't ask that.
Yeah.
You just accept it. That's what I did anyhow. But my two best buddies were the Iowa, the battleship Iowa, that Leland Ward and George Dukowski. He was from St. Paul, and Leland Ward and I were from Princeton. For some reason or other, we piled up together, and we got to took rickshaws around, and we got some pictures in riding in a rickshaw.
Now, were you stationed in Tokyo?
No, I was out in the harbor.
Okay.
Yeah, the battleship Iowa has to be out in the harbor.
So how far was that from Tokyo?
Well, you can see Tokyo.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right in the harbor.
Okay.
Okay, so, and we would take a Liberty boat. I don't know what kind of a boat you're calling it, Higgins boat or whatever, on Liberty. And some boys came back full of sake. At one point, while we were still in the U.S., at Long Beach, one guy came back aboard ship, saluted the officer of the deck, and promptly fell overboard about 18 feet into the water.
Wow.
Well, he was drunk. I think they just fished him out. Oh, yeah.
Now, what about I had one of my veterans tell me, who was in Japan after the war, that he witnessed a lot of the swords, that the Japanese men had to give up their swords as part of the agreement after the war. Did you see any of this at all?
I had a sword that they brought aboard the battleship Iowa, dumped 15 feet from into the deck, and you could go out there and pick up whatever sword you wanted. Well, I had one.
Okay.
But I never was around when somebody recognized a sword from the family But there's a ceremonial surge, and I had a Japanese rifle, and it came aboard, and I picked one up, and I had it until, well, my brother's farm, somebody broke into their house in Audubon, and it's one of the things that they took was the Japanese rifle.
Whoa.
And I also shot a deer with that Japanese rifle.
Wow.
In the Audubon area. So somebody has my Japanese rifle, and I think I lost the sword also. Ceremonial sword about 20 inches long. I think somebody at the same time they broke into the farmhouse out there, they must have decided they needed a sword, but the sword disappeared.
So both the sword and the rifle you got on the ship, somebody had procured them some way and brought them to the ship.
Oh yeah, yeah. They bought a whole big cargo net.
Dropped swords.
Dropped them about 18 feet off. And a lot of them got broken up.
Yep. We were talking about swords. The swords, they would just drop them onto the ship
from these
big nets.
With the cargo net. Oh, dropped them 18, 20 feet. Well, maybe not quite that far, all of them. But I suppose they kind of knew that they were going to be broken up because you weren't supposed to have a foreign military gun. So if my rifle worked like a charm, I shot my deer with it.
So you weren't supposed to take it with you?
No, you could have it. It was yours. It was yours. You wrapped it up, slipped it with it under your bunk, no problem.
Okay. Now, what did you think about the bombings, the atomic bombings in Japan?
Well, we were at war. And at war, you do just about anything you please. Sorry to say. Atrocities and bombing civilians. But that's the way the war goes. The Hiroshima and Nagasaki were horrible. Well, you see, I was in a war mood myself. I grew up with the whole war, with my brother, both of them in the military, and I was ready to go, but I was too young. But I was happy to get over to Japan, and it did not bother me to see the place all bombed to heck, as I remembered. I suppose I've come to be more civil, so to speak, now that I'm 50 years away from the war. But it never did really make me so sad that so many people died. I did not like the idea of having people die just for me, but that's the way war is, you know. The same thing as accidents on the highway. Geez. You wonder, somebody has to die just because the road hasn't quite been prepared properly? I don't know. But as I say, it did not really bother me because I was in a war mood. Because I went through the whole war, and my father came over from Germany when he was 3 years old. He only had a fifth grade education, but he was smart as a whip. He grew up in a Lutheran congregation He was part of the deacons.
So tell me, when were you discharged from the military?
Hold it just a second.
Right here it says, probably.
Honorable discharge.
September 5th.
Yeah.
Is it right here? Let's see. September 5th, 1946.
Yes, right. That's right.
Okay.
September 5th, 1946, at 3 p.m. Well, this is when the honorable discharge was at Mille Lacs County, Minnesota. So, notice of separation from military service. Here's my address. Sea rating booklet. Seaman First Class. Oh, I made $157.45.
A month?
I think so. That's how much money I collected at the time of separation.
Time of discharge.
Yeah. And I got $115.10 for travel money. And initial mustering out pay, $100, whatever that means. So I got two medals. Asiatic Pacific Area World War II Victory Medal. And I don't know where they are. I have no idea.
So were you in Japan up until 1946 when you were discharged?
In just ahead of being... Yeah.
Till August of 1946?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, effective date of allotment discontinued. August 1946.
Okay. So you were up in Japan until then.
Yeah.
And you switched your ships from the U.S. Yeah. Iowa to the U.S. Columbus.
Yes. And I was in only 11 and a half months total.
Okay. Could you have stayed in longer if you wanted?
I suppose I could have.
But you didn't want to.
Oh, it wasn't that I didn't want to. Young kid, boy. That's too long ago to try to remember why I did not sign over. I guess I haven't asked myself that question. Something like when I came back, I joined the Air National Guard. That was some several years after I got out of the Navy, back to Princeton, and to Fargo. I'll get it right. They had a little program, try one. So I stayed in the Air National Guard in Fargo here for about 15 months. And again, I could not keep my mouth shut. I tried to get some kind of responsibility to do something. Well, I could take mug shots, you know what mug shot is. That's all I could do.
That was boring?
Boring, yeah. It wasn't even fun. Not even boring, it was not only fun. Just get them close to the wall, get a picture. 2 days later, do it again. So, as I say, long and short of it was, I told them, what did you think about your service to the Air National Guard? He says, if I could have done something, it would have pleased me more. I put that down on the paper. And I don't know if they liked that. So, that's what I told them. It was sort of boring. The only thing I had going for me was my officer, not an officer, but enlisted man, Ev Brust. He tried to get me to do some things that sounded a little bit interesting, but it'd be 15 minutes, not a whole hour. But And the long and short was, when they asked me, what did you think about your service in the Air National Guard? I said, if I could have done something, it would have been better for me. So I had had enough experience to know, if you aren't doing anything, you're doing nothing. But I got to fly an airplane.
You did?
I did.
Wow.
But didn't I tell you about that?
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well. Major Joe, not Joe Foch, but French, F-R-E-N-C-H, Major Joe French. He lived, his farm home was up at Ada. And I don't know, I just chatted with him one day. I said, is it possible that I could go up and fly with you in the F-16 or whatever airplane it was? Well, he says, I don't think there's any problem. So he says he was going to be going up a couple of days or whatever to go to Ada, just fly over his parents' farm. So I got a picture of me in my Air National Guard uniform, putting on my helmet. And so I get in the back seat, and we go up to Ada. And then I said, we're going to be going down to Detroit Lakes area. It's about that far. They fly very fast. And I said, see, can I take over the controls a little bit? I've flown a couple of airplanes myself, little Piper Cubs and stuff. He said, no problem. So I go over to my brother's farm, just half a mile north of Audubon. And I'm up at about 9,000 feet, and I come down to about 1,000. Pull back and get it. Climb out of the dive. A couple of days later, my brother says, were you that son of a bitch to try to take the top off my silo?
He knew it was you.
No, he didn't know, but...
He wondered.
I was at least 1,000 feet over the top of the silo. Yeah, so I said, that was probably me. But I was nowhere near to hitting your silo.
So how did your Navy experience affect your life?
It was the best thing I could have ever done.
Tell me why.
Because I got not only to leave home, I wasn't afraid of home, but I was 17, 18 years old. I wanted to go. I wanted to be in the war. I was too young, and the war was over. And I got to Japan. I got to see people like the boys from Arkansas who were tough, tough, tough. I saw that you weren't so tough when you got a shot. They're the first ones that died on, they call it the grander. Over and over. All those Arkansas boys, tough boys. And I got to Japan. I loved the Far East. I still love the Far East. And I went to China, and I hitchhiked from the ocean end of the Great Wall to the inland end, 4,000 kilometers inland.
Wow, and this is much later you went back?
Oh, yes. This was in 1970, just ahead of Tiananmen Square. I know I can't tell you what it is, but
it was in 1986, wasn't it?
You're right.
Okay.
You're better knowledge than me. You're younger than me.
Oh, well, I am a little bit younger, yes. I'm about half your age.
As I say, I hitchhiked. I rode on a Chinese train. I lived in a four bunk rail car with two ladies underneath me. Everybody respected each other. And as I say, I got to Urumqi, U-R-U-M-G-I, Urumqi, the inland end of the Great Wall. I was traveling with a young kid, young boy, not a kid, from Vancouver, B.C. And we were almost at the very great end of the wall. And I said, why don't we go a little bit farther? All you could, you had to get come down off of a parapet and walk. And we went 1,500 feet, and the guard has got his gun up. We turned around and went back.
Wow.
So my friend from Vancouver, B.C., we will never forget that experience.
Wow.
And I enjoyed traveling with him. He was half my age. You know, he's only 25, 30, give or take. But fantastic trip we had. As I say, I love the Far East, China especially, even though I'm still disappointed down in the entryway. They have a Chinese Christmas tree. Made in China.
Bought from Walmart, probably.
Probably so. Yeah. So, let's see, what else? As I say, I've had an interesting life, especially with Sharon. We traveled and had such enjoyable trips. But then when she started to have problems with her kidneys, I cried like a baby. Not afraid to say it. But the way it goes in life. Oh, what else?
Any other memorable experiences during the military in Japan?
Oh, let's see. No, we stayed in the Japanese home and went to the Yokosuka Enlisted Men's Club and drank beer with a friend from Princeton. And, I made a damn fool mistake by drinking beer instead of being able to go up and go up to Mount Fuji. But that's what happens in life if you do damn fool things.
Well, you're young, too. Sometimes you make different decisions.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think other than bringing back a Japanese rifle and a bayonet, I lost the bayonet on the farm burglary as well as the rifle. But I don't think I got... Oh, here, I got one little thing. I'm not sure. Just hang on a second.
So this is your Yokosuka flag?
Yes, it is.
I'll ask you one more question. Yep. How did you feel about World War II, given the fact that both of your parents were German descent?
They were Americans. Yeah. My mom was born in the U.S., but my father was born in Germany, and he came over when he was 3 years old, and he had only a fifth grade education, but he was smart as a damn whip. And, he was totally against Germany, Hitler. Oh, yeah. I suspect his family must have known something was not going to be going right in Germany. I guess if I was told, I have forgot why they came to the U.S. You know, when you're only 3 to 4 to 5, 7, 8 years old, you don't ask all these questions. You don't like what you're doing. Yeah. So I wish I had, but obviously I didn't do it.
What year approximately did your father come over from Germany?
Oh, I think I got it written down someplace. I think it would be...
About 1900?
Before that.
Okay.
Let's see. He died at 54 years old. If he only came over at 3 years old.
He died at how old? 55?
54,
55. And he died in 1941?
45.
He died in 1945, and so he was about 55. So he would have come over about 1893, approximately.
I think that's...
1893.
We were about there.
Okay.
And my mother was born in southern Minnesota.
Okay.
So have I bored you?
No. Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Gebert. Mr. Gebert.
Close enough.
Gebert, is that right?
I'm
not saying it right. How do you say it?
Gebert.
Gebert. Mr. Gebert, thank you very much.